conversation. He seemed satisfied with my decision to stay with the WHO. With the window down all the way, I leaned out, resting my chin on my hands. The morning air was warm, licked by the first rays of sunlight. When I looked up past the very tip-top of the wild trees, there was nothing but blue sky. A small sound, a ghost of a sigh, was released behind us. Both Liam and I turned to look at Zoo's sleeping face.
"Did we wake you up last night?" he asked.
"I caught a little of it," I said.
"Does she have a lot of nightmares?"
"In the few weeks I've known her, it's been an every other night thing. Sometimes she dreams about Caledonia and I can talk her down, but I never know what to say about her family. I swear if I ever meet her parents, I'm going to..." His voice trailed off, but the anger coating it had given the air a palpable charge.
"What did they do to her?
Gave her away because they were afraid of her?" he said.
"Like me and Chubbs? Our folks tried to keep us hidden, and that's why we went to the camp late.
Zoo's parents actually sent her away when she short-circuited her dad's car in the middle of a freeway.
Oh, God.
They sent her during the first official collection." He propped an elbow along the door panel and leaned his face against his hand. His Redskins cap hid his eyes from view.
"I forgot you missed this."
I waited for him to explain. "It was after most people our age had already been taken or were in hiding. The government issued a notice that any parents who didn't feel safe or capable of taking care of their kiddos could send them to school on a specific morning, and the Psi Special Forces would be there to collect them for rehabilitation. Kept it all very hush-hush to avoid upsetting the children or inciting them to misbehave."
I rubbed my forehead, trying to force out the images flittering through my mind.
"Did she actually tell you this?"
"Tell me? Tell me? You mean?"
He kept his eyes straight ahead, but I saw his hands choke the wheel.
"No. She wrote it out in bits and pieces. I haven't heard her say a single word since..."
"Since the breakout?" I finished. I felt relieved in spite of everything I knew.
"It's a choice, then, not something they did to her."
"No, it has everything to do with what they did, and it's not a choice," Liam said.
"I think maybe the most frustrating feeling in the world is to have something to say, but not know how to put it into words. To have lived through something, but not be able to get it out of you before it festers. I mean, you're right, she can talk, and maybe one day she will. After everything I've put her through, after what happened, I just don't know."
It was the most frustrating feeling in the world, second only to the inherent helplessness that came with being trapped in a camp, all of your decisions made for you. After what had happened with Sam, I didn't say a word for almost a full year. There was just no way to vocalize that kind of pain. The radio jumped as we lost the station's signal, switching through a Spanish language channel, then to one with classical music, before finally settling on the dry, nasally voice of a man reading the news. "To inform you that initial reports indicate that 4 separate explosions were set off this morning in Manhattan's subway." Liam's finger shot out to switch the channel, but I changed it right back. "Though confirmation has been slow to come out of the city, we believe these explosions were not nuclear or biological in nature and were concentrated around Midtown, where President Gray was rumored to be in hiding after the most recent attempt on his life."
"League? West Coast? Or fake?"
Chubb's sleepy voice floated up behind us.
"Our sources indicate that President Gray and his cabinet believe this to be the work of the Federal Coalition."
"Federal Coalition?" I repeated.
"West Coast," the boys answered together. Chubbs elaborated. "Based out of Los Angeles. They're the section of the government that survived the D.C. bombings and weren't crazy about the idea of Gray disregarding that whole 2-term limit they had set up. They're mostly talking heads since the military sided with Gray, obviously."
"Why is Gray in New York and not Washington?" I asked.
"They're still rebuilding the Capitol and the White House, only it's not going so well since, you know, they defaulted on all of their debt," Liam said. He spread the government out between Virginia and New York for its protection, to make sure none of the fugitive Psi groups or the League got any ideas about wiping it out all at once. So, the Federal Coalition, they're against the camps? The reform program? Chubb sighed a little.
Hate to break it to you, Green, but something you'll learn pretty fast is that we're not exactly a priority to anyone right now. Everyone's more focused on the fact that the country is broke as a joke.
Who do we like, then? I pressed.
We like us, Liam said after a while, and that's about it.
There were, apparently, only two restaurant chains left in the state of Virginia, or at least the western half of it, Cracker Barrel and Waffle House, and one wasn't open before 9 o'clock in the morning.
Thank goodness, Liam said in a solemn voice as he parked a short distance away from the Waffle House. I don't know how we would have chosen between these two fine culinary establishments.
He had nominated himself to order whatever food he could afford with $20, but refused when I asked if he wanted me to go with him. Zoo held up a small notebook, waving it to get his attention as he stepped outside.
Done already?
She nodded.
Why don't you have Chubbs check your answers?
No, don't make that face.
He's better at math than I am anyway.
You're damn right I am, Chubbs said without looking up from his book. Zoo flipped the flimsy notebook open to a blank page and scribbled something down. When she held it up for him to see, Liam grinned.
Whoa, long division. I think you're getting ahead of yourself, ma'am. You still haven't conquered your double-digit multiplying.
I watched him hop out of the minivan, a flare of annoyance shooting up from my core. All of this would have been so much easier if he wasn't the only one of us who looked old enough to pass for 20. At least I'd feel a lot better knowing one of us could be out there watching his back. Liam must have felt my gaze burning through the back of his jacket because he stopped and turned to wave before disappearing around the corner.
You really have to stop encouraging him, Chubbs was saying to Zoo.
I glanced back, watching as he used the blunt end of her pencil to follow lines of numbers on the page.
He needs to accept reality at some point.
Zoo's face scrunched up, twisting like a piece of hard lemon candy was stuck on her tongue. She punched him in the shoulder.
I'm sorry, he said, but clearly wasn't. It's just a waste of time and energy to teach you this stuff when you're never going to get the chance to use it.
You don't know that, I said. Flashing Zoo a reassuring smile, I added, you'll be ahead of everyone else your age by the time things go back to normal. When had I started believing in normal anyway? Everything I had been through up to that point could only be used as support for Chubbs' argument. He was right, even if I didn't want to admit it.
You know what I'd be doing if things were normal? Chubbs said. I'd be picking which college I was going to attend later this fall. I'd have taken my SATs, gone to football games and prom, taken chemistry.
His voice trailed off, but I picked up the frayed ends of his thought, all the same. How could I not? These were the exact things I thought about when I let myself get to that dark place of should be and could have been. My mom said once that education was a privilege not afforded to everyone. But she was wrong. It wasn't a privilege. It was our right. We had the right to a future. Zoo sensed the shift of mood. She looked between us, lips moving silently. We needed a change of subject.
Pfft, I said, crossing my arms over my chest and leaning back against the seat, like you would have ever gone to a football game.
Hey, I resent that. Chubbs handed Zoo her notebook. Here, you need to work on your nines. When he turned back to me, it was with a disapproving look.
I can't believe you, of all people, fell for his cotton candy dreams.
What's that supposed to mean?
You were in Thurman for what, 5 years?
6, I corrected. And you're missing the point. It's not that I believe in what Lee's saying. It's that I hope he's right. I really, really hope he's right. Because what's the alternative? We're stuck hiding out until their generation dies off? We flee to Canada?
Good luck with that. Chubbs said, both Canada and Mexico have built walls to keep us out and them in.
Because they thought IAAN was a contagious disease?
No.
Because they've hated us all along and we're only looking for the right excuse to keep our fat asses and fanny packs out of their countries forever. Liam chose that exact moment to reappear, four styrofoam containers balanced between his hands. He was moving fast, almost at a run. I leaned over and popped the door open for him, and he all but dumped the containers on my lap.
"Oh, God, what now?" Chubbs cried.
"Whoa," I began, trying to keep the hot food from spilling all over my legs and the seat. Betty's engine started with a snarl, and suddenly we were rocketing backward. With the sheet blocking the back window, Liam had to rely on using the side mirror to navigate us down the road and up into the small back alley that divided the Waffle House from an abandoned jewelry consignment store. I braced an elbow against the door as he steered the old minivan past the dumpsters to the cramped employee parking lot, tucked away in a dead end around the corner. The minivan lurched to a stop, throwing all four of us forward.
"We're going to stay here for a little while," he announced to our terrified faces. "Don't panic, but I think I saw... I mean, it'll just be safer here for a bit."
"You saw her?" It wasn't a question. Chubbs already knew the answer before he asked. "Lady Jane." Liam rubbed the back of his neck as he leaned forward. He had left the nose of the minivan out far enough so we could peer around Waffle House's wall to see down the alleyway.
"Yeah, I'm pretty sure."
How was it possible that she had caught up with us?
"Holy hell!" Chubbs squawked. "Pretty sure or definitely sure?"
After a moment, Liam answered.
"Definitely sure. She's got a new set of wheels, a white truck, but I'd recognize that smug face anywhere."
"Did she see you?" I asked.
"I don't know," he said. "Probably not, otherwise she and whoever her new boy toy is would have tried to run me down. They drove by just as I was leaving."
I craned my neck forward, trying to see far enough past the wall of the restaurant to the alley opening. As if on cue, a glinting white truck rolled by, two dark figures in the front seats. Liam and I flew back against our seats at the exact same moment, looking at each other in alarm. I don't think either of us took a breath until we were sure no one was coming down the alley to investigate. He cleared his throat.
How about you pass out the food? I'll just check.
Liam Michael Stewart.
Chubb's voice thundered from the back seat.
If you step one foot out of this minivan, I will order Green to run you down with it.
Don't think I won't, I warned, knowing exactly what Liam wanted to do. Go out and risk his neck by walking down the alley to make sure the coast was clear. When I handed him a styrofoam container, he slumped back in his seat, accepting defeat. Liam had ordered each of us a simple meal of scrambled eggs, bacon, and two pancakes without syrup. The others dug in with gusto, inhaling the meal in five bites. I gave my pancakes to Zoo before Liam had the chance to. After some semblance of calm had settled back over us, he pulled his map up and spread it out over the wheel. The dashboard clock beside him said 7:25 a.m., and when he turned to face us, it was with an expression of determination I had never seen someone wear so early in the morning.
"Okay, team," he began. "We need to get back on the right track. I know our last East River was a total bust, but we have to keep looking. So let's review the facts those blues gave us. Edo."
It was only after a full minute of silence that I realized that was the extent of the facts.
"We should have tried to bribe them for more information," Chubb said.
"With what?" Liam said, setting the map down. "They wouldn't take you, Chubbs, and you're our most precious commodity." Chubbs, unsurprisingly, did not find that funny.
"Did they spell Edo out for you? Was it 1D or 2? I asked, because if it's an actual clue, that could make a difference.
The two boys shared a look.
"Well? Crap,"
Liam said finally. I felt a sharp tug on my arm and turned toward Zoo, who was holding up her notebook for us to see. She had written the letters E-D-O.
"Nice job, Zoo," Liam said. "Good thing one of us was listening."
"And that was it?" I said.
"The only other thing they coughed up was that if we hit Raleigh, we'd gone too far south."
"And we had to beg for even that," Liam confessed. "It was really pathetic."
They could have been pulling our legs, too. Chubb said, "That's what irritates me the most. If East River is so great, why were they leaving?"
"They were going home. Remember? The slip kid." While they were arguing, I slipped the map out from under Liam's hands and squinted at it, trying to make sense of the lines. He had given me a very vague rundown of how to route a path from point A to point B, but it was still overwhelming.
"What are you guys thinking?" I asked. "What theory were you working with?"
"We ran across the kids right around the Ohio state line," Liam said. "They were coming from the east, headed west. If you add that to the other bit about D.C. and Raleigh, the likely candidates become West Virginia, Virginia, or Maryland."
Zoo said Edo is another name for Tokyo, but it seems a little far-fetched he'd be there.
"And I think it's a code," Chubb said, "a cipher of some kind."
He sat up a little straighter, turning to face me fully. The way the smile spread over his face made me think of a nature documentary we watched once in school, about the way crocodiles flash their teeth as they skim through the water toward their prey.
"Speaking of codes, didn't you say the league broke you out because you were a world-class codebreaker?"
"Crap. I didn't say world-class."
"Oh, yeah!"
Liam's face lit with the most heartbreaking expression of excitement.
"Can you take a stab at it?"
"Double crap."
I guess," I said, careful to keep my face neutral. "Zoo, can I see the notebook again?"
They were all staring at me. They might as well have been sitting on my chest for how paralyzing it was. It was near freezing in the van without the heat on, but my body felt heavy with hot, sticky panic. I was holding onto that notebook like it was a prayer from heaven. I knew there were kids out there who could plug in a few dozen letters into their brain and spew out complex coordinates or immediately spot a riddle hidden in a puzzle, but I definitely was not one of them. Chubb snorted.
"Looks like the league picked a lemon."
"Hey," Liam said, his tone sharp. "We've been mulling over the damn thing for 2 weeks and have figured out exactly nothing. You can't even give her an hour to think about it."
"Could I sub out the letters E-D-O for numbers? 5, 4, 15?
God, what other kinds of codes were there? A railroad code? No, that wasn't right. Or was it not a code? That would make a hell of a lot more sense, actually. The riddle had to be something that kids both in and out of camps could figure out, and it couldn't be too difficult, otherwise no one would ever get it.
Lie, I thought, reaching up to smooth a stray piece of hair back from my face. Just lie. Just do it. Just say something. What did three-digit numbers usually represent? A price, a time, an area code? Oh, if I was right. Oh, God, was more like it.
Oh, Liam repeated. Oh, what?
I'd forgotten. Well, I corrected myself. I could be remembering it wrong, so don't get too excited, but I think it's a Virginia area code.
There's no area code that's four digits, Chubb said. 5, 4, 15 doesn't work.
But 5, 4, 0 does, I said. People sub out O for zero when they talk sometimes, right?
Liam scratched the back of his head and looked over at Chubb's. 540? Does that sound familiar to you? I turned toward Chubbs, suddenly seeing him in a new light.
You're from Virginia?
He crossed his arms and looked out his window.
I'm from Northern Virginia.
Well, that figured. 540 is Western Virginia, I explained to Liam. I'm not sure how far north and south it extends, but it should be right around this area, I think. I showed him on the map. I didn't just think. I knew. 540 had been my area code when I lived with my parents in Salem. There are a number of cities and towns, but there's also a lot of undeveloped land. Not a bad place to hide out.
Is that a fact?
Liam kept his eyes on the road and his voice even, but there was something maybe a little bit too casual about it.
Did you grow up near there?
I looked down at the notebook in my hands, feeling something clench in my chest.
No, I didn't.
Virginia Beach, then. I shook my head.
Not any place you've been or heard of. I heard Chubb's tongue cluck as he opened his mouth to say something, but there was a sharp cough from the driver's seat. The topic had been dropped, and no one was willing to try picking it up again, least of all me.
Well, it's as good of a lead as any, though I wish the area was a little smaller.
He glanced my way. Thanks, Ruby Tuesday. A not unpleasant warmth rushed up from my center. Don't mention it. And if I'm wrong, I let the thought trail off. It was a good lead. With one last glance down the alley to make sure it was clear, Liam refolded the map and tossed it back into the open glove box. Betty came back to life with a low growl.
Where are we going? Chubbs asked.
It's a place I know. Liam gave a one-shoulder shrug.
Some place I stayed before. The drive shouldn't take us that long. Maybe 2 hours. If I get lost, though, one of you Virginians is going to have to step up to the plate and help me out.
It had been a very long time since someone had labeled me like that, as a person with a home. It was true I had been born here, but Thurmond had been my home for nearly as long as it hadn't. Gray walls and concrete floors had bleached out almost every memory of my parents' house, stripping away first the small details, the smell of my mom's honey-soaked biscuits, the order of the pictures lining the staircase wall, before going on to devour the bigger ones, too. I used to wonder, at night when it was quiet enough in the cabin to think, when I let myself get to the point of wishing for home, if the home in my heart was supposed to be the place where I'd been born, or if it was the place that was raising me, if I got to choose it, or if it had somehow already claimed me. The truth was, when I looked at my reflection in the window, I couldn't see any bit of the Ruby that had lived in a little white house at the end of a lane, honey sticking to her fingers and hair falling from her braids, and it made me feel empty in a way, like I had forgotten the words to my favorite song. That girl was gone forever, and all that was left was a product of the place that had taught her to fear the bright things inside of her heart. We passed exit after exit to Harrisonburg and the turnoffs for James Madison University. Driving down a major highway with nothing more than a prayer that no one would pull us over wasn't exactly my idea of a good time, but for now, the risk seemed worth it, at least for the view. I loved the Shenandoah Valley, every inch of its gorgeous spread. When I was little, my parents used to pull me out of school early for a long weekend of hiking or camping. I never brought books or video games for the drive. I didn't need them. I would just stare out the window and drink it all in. You know in movies, the ones set in older times, when the shot freezes on the hero or heroine gazing out over the forest or river, and the sun catches the leaves at just the right slant, and the music begins to swell? That's exactly how I felt as we entered the Shenandoah Valley. It didn't hit me until that moment, until the first glimpse of the gauzy blue mist surrounding the mountains, that we really were in Western Virginia, that if we stayed on the highway, we'd be 2 hours away from my parents in Salem. 2 hours. I didn't know how to feel about that.
Ugh, Liam groaned, pointing toward the temporary road sign up ahead. 81, closed between Harrisonburg and Staunton, use local roads.
By 9 o'clock in the morning, we were finally deep enough into Harrisonburg to find its pulse of life. Here and there, we saw restaurants opening their doors to the morning light. We passed a few older adults pedaling away on their bikes, balancing precariously on two wheels with their briefcases or bags, their heads bent toward the sidewalk. They didn't even look up as we passed. No JMU students, though. None that I could spot. Chubbs sighed at the sight of them, leaning his forehead against the window.
You okay, buddy?
Liam asked. Need to stop and smell the scholasticism?
What's the point?
Chubbs shook his head. It's closed, like all of the others. I whirled around in my seat.
Why?
Lack of students, mostly. If you're old enough to go to college, you're old enough to be drafted. Even if that wasn't the case, I doubt people can really afford it anymore.
Jesus, that's depressing, I said.
The offer still stands, Liam told his friend.
You know, I'm happy to break into a classroom for you if you need to sit in one of those cramped seats and stare at a whiteboard for a while. I know how much you like the smell of dry erase markers.
I appreciate that, Chubb said, folding his hands in his lap. But it's not necessary.
We passed what I thought must have been a black wrought iron fence, but it was almost impossible to see, trapped as it was beneath what looked to be a raggedy patchwork blanket. It wasn't until we got closer that I realized what we were actually looking at. Hundreds, maybe thousands, of sheets of paper that had been tied and taped onto the fence or stuck between the thin bars. Liam slowed the car, tilting his sunglasses down to squint at them.
"What do they say?" Chubbs asked. "I can't..."
Zhu only put her head back down and shut her eyes. They were missing posters, with the faces of little kids and teenagers, photographs, signs whose wording had been smeared away by rain, the biggest of these being a banner that said nothing more than Matthew 19:14. It hung crookedly, almost like someone had tried to rip it down, only to have someone else come along and half-heartedly string it back up. The wall of faded paper took a beating as the wind blew through the fences, ripping some of the more decrepit sheets free and making others flutter like hummingbird wings. And where there was room, we saw stuffed animals and flowers and blankets and ribbons. No, not missing, I thought. Those kids had been taken, or really were gone forever. Their parents and families were searching for them, posting their pictures because they wanted them back, needed them.
God.
Liam's voice sounded strained.
Where did they say we could pick the 81 back up again?
The ash trees lining the lonely one-lane back road were just coming into their lovely young skin, but in the afternoon light, their shadows couldn't have been longer. 14. I slipped off into sleep somewhere between Staunton and Lexington, and woke up just in time to get a perfect view of the towering white warehouse that was Roanoke, Virginia's former Walmart. Sure, the blue sign was still clinging desperately to the side of the building, but that was about the only recognizable thing about the supercenter. A number of stray carts wandered across the parking lot aimlessly, carried this and that way depending on each moody gust of wind. With the exception of a few abandoned cars and green dumpsters, the enormous blacktop parking lot was empty. Against the tangerine blush of the afternoon sun, it looked like the apocalypse had already touched down in Virginia. And we were only a stone's throw away from Salem. A 10-minute drive. My stomach clenched at the thought. Once again, Liam insisted on going in alone to check it out. I felt Zoo's rubber glove on my arm and didn't need to look at her face to know what kind of expression I would find there. She didn't want him charging into what looked like an honest-to-God hellhole alone any more than I did. This is why you stayed, I reminded myself, to take care of them. And in that moment, the person that needed me most was the one walking away. I jumped out of bed, my hand gripping the door handle. Honk the horn 3 times for trouble, I said, and slid the door shut. Liam must have heard because he waited for me, leaning against one of the rusted shopping cart stalls. Any way I could convince you to go back to Betty? Nope, I said. Come on. He fell in step beside me, fists dug deep in his pockets. I couldn't see his eyes, but the way he was slouching toward the demolished doors was telling enough.
You asked me before how I knew about this place, he said when we were nearly to the entrance.
No. No, it's okay. I know, none of my business.
Green, Liam said, it's okay. I just don't know where to begin. You know Chubbs and I were both in hiding. Well, it wasn't exactly pleasant for either of us. He at least got to go stay at his grandparents' cabin in Pennsylvania.
Ah, but you had the pleasure of holing up in this fine American establishment.
Among other places, Liam said. I don't like to talk about that time in front of Zoo. I don't want her to think that that's what her life is going to be.
But you can't lie to her, I said. I know you don't want to scare her, but you can't pretend that her life isn't going to be hard. It's not fair.
Not fair?
He sucked in a sharp breath, closing his eyes. When he spoke again, his voice had returned to his usual soft tones.
Never mind. Forget it.
Hey,
I said, taking his arm. I get it, okay? I'm on your side. But you can't act like it's going to be easy. Don't do that to her. Don't set her up to be crushed. I was in camp with thousands of kids who grew up thinking Mommy and Daddy were always going to be there for them. And they, we, are all coming out of this seriously damaged. Whoa, 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 Liam said, all traces of anger gone. You are not damaged. That I could have protested until I was blue in the face. Whoever had unhooked Walmart's glass sliding doors from their tracks hadn't done a good job of finding a safe place to store them. Shards of glass coated the cement floor, blown out dozens of feet from the black metal frames. We stepped over and through their mangled shapes, entering that small, strange space where the greeter would have been. Next to me, Liam's foot slipped against the sallow dust collected on the floor. I shot an arm out to brace him as he grunted in surprise. Even as I helped him right himself, his eyes remained fixed on the ground, where a dozen footprints fanned out in the dust. Every shape and size, from the jagged pattern of the sole of a man's hiking boot to the decorative swirly curls left behind by a young child's tennis shoe, all stamped out there like cookies cut from a fresh spread of dough. They could be old, I whispered. Liam nodded but didn't pull away from my side. I hadn't fooled either of us. The store's power had been shut off some time ago, and it was clear it had been open to the wild for too long. There was only a second between when we first heard the rattling in the nearby shelves and when Liam jumped in front of me. It's... I began, but he silenced me with a shake of his head. We watched the shelves, waiting. And when the deer, a gorgeous, sweet thing with a silky caramel coat and big black eyes, came prancing out from behind the overturned magazine racks, Liam and I looked at each other, dissolving into shaky laughter. Liam pressed his finger to his lips and waved me forward, his eyes scanning the dark fleet of identical cash registers in front of us. Someone had taken the carts from the store and tried stuffing them in the lanes, as if to create a kind of fortified wall against any unwanted visitors. Carefully, without disturbing the pile-up of plastic baskets, we climbed up and over the nearest register's conveyor belt. Standing on top of it, I could see where more shelves had been lined up in front of the other exit. It looked as though something huge had come slamming through it at one point, bursting through the makeshift barricade. What did that? I think there's some part of everyone, sigh or not, that's tuned into the memories of a place. Strong feelings, especially terror and desperation, leave an imprint on the air that echo back to whoever's unlucky enough to walk through that place again. It felt like the darkness was stroking beneath my chin with a beckoning finger, whispering to me to lean forward and know its secrets. Something terrible happened here, I thought, feeling a cold drip down my spine. The wind whistled through the broken doors, playing us the kind of screeching song that made the hair on the back of my neck stand on end. I wanted to leave. This was not a safe place. This was not a place to bring Zoo or Chubbs. So why was Liam still going forward? Overhead, the emergency lights flickered on and off, buzzing like boxes of trapped flies. Everything beneath them was cast in a sickly green light, and as he moved farther and farther down the first aisle, it seemed like the darkness waiting at the end of it would swallow him whole. I sprung forward into the sea of empty metal shelves, half of which were knocked flat on their backs or leaning against others in slanted lines, their shelves buckling under some invisible weight. My sneakers squeaked as I wove through the sea of lotions, mouthwash, and nail polish on the floor. Things that seemed so necessary in the past, so vital to life, wasted and forgotten. When I caught up to him again, my fingers closed around the soft, loose leather of his jacket's sleeve. At the slightest tug, Liam turned, his blue eyes lit up in surprise. I took a step back and pulled my hand back to my side, shocked at myself. It had felt natural to do it. I hadn't been thinking at all, only feeling a very sharp, real need to be close to him. "I think we should leave," I whispered. "Something about this place doesn't feel right." And it had nothing to do with the strange crying of the wind or the birds high up in the old store's rafters. "We're okay," he said. His back was to me, but he slipped his hand from his pocket. It drifted back toward me, floating up through the darkness. I didn't know whether he meant to motion me to move forward or for me to take it, but I couldn't bring myself to do either. We walked side by side toward the back right corner of the store. It seemed that this section of the store, with all of its hardware and light bulbs, had been left somewhat alone, or at least hadn't seemed as useful to the people who had picked the other shelves to the bone. I saw where we were headed immediately. Someone had set up their own little camp, using bright blue pool rafts as mattresses. A few empty boxes of graham crackers and Hostess cupcakes were piled on top of a cooler, and on top of that was a small wireless radio and lantern flashlight.
Wow, I can't believe this is still here.
Liam stood a foot behind me, his arms crossed over his chest. I followed his gaze down to the dozens of indentations in the cracked white tile. They were almost enough to distract me from the patchwork of old bloodstains on the ground beneath his feet. My lips parted.
It's old, Liam said quickly, like that would make me feel any better.
Liam reached toward me, forcing a smile. I blew out the breath I had been holding and reached up to take his hand. At almost the exact moment our hands touched, I saw it. The emergency light above that section of the back wall snapped back to full glare like a spotlight, illuminating the enormous black psi symbol painted there, along with a very clear message, "Get out now." The thick, uneven letters looked like they were weeping. The light crackled and went back out with a loud pop, but I still threw myself forward, out of Liam's grip, straight for the spray-painted message. Because that smell? The way the words drooped? I pressed my fingers against the psi symbol, and they came away sticky. Black. Fresh paint. Liam had only just reached me when I felt the strangest sensation of burning right at my core. I looked down, expecting to see a spark igniting the front of Zoo's ridiculous dress, and then I was falling, and Liam was falling on top of me, bulldozed right over as if we had been nothing more than two daisies poking up through the cracks in the tile. Liam's shoulder rammed into my chest, knocking the air out of our lungs. I tried to lift my head to see exactly what had happened, but there was this weight, this solid, invisible slab of stone, keeping me on my back and Liam flat against me. The floor was freezing at my back, but my entire focus was on the solid press of his shoulder against my cheek. Our hands were caught between us, and for a moment I had the uneasy sensation of not knowing where one of us began and the other ended. He swallowed hard, the pulse in his throat close enough for me to hear it. Liam moved to lift his head, straining the muscles that lined the strong column of his spine.
"Hey!" he shouted. "Who's there?"
The only response was another shove from the invisible hands. Suddenly we were shooting across the ground, Liam's leather jacket squealing against the dusty floor as we slid. I watched the emergency lights beyond Liam's head pass with dizzying speed, tracking together like a single beam. Riotous laughter followed us down the aisles, seeming to come from below us, above us, on either side. I thought I saw a dark shape move out of the corner of my eye, but it looked more like a monster than a person. We tore through ribbons of ripped shower curtains, the body lotion, the bleach, to the line of cash registers at the front of the store.
"Cut it out!" Liam yelled. "We're..."
There are some sounds you hear once and never forget. A bone breaking, an ice cream truck song, Velcro, a gun safety clicking off. "No," I thought, "not now, not here." We slid to a painful stop at the checkout lanes, the impact with the metal jarring every sense out of my body. There was a single moment of agonizing silence before the once dead store lights surged into brightness, and then the cash register flashed on, conveyor belt sputtering to life. First one lane, then the next, and the next, every single one falling to order like soldiers. The numbered signs above blinked between yellow and blue, like a dozen warning signals, faster than my eyes could follow. At first I thought it was white noise. All at once, the building's security alarms, intercom system, and televised displays went off, 100 different voices screaming at us. Block after block of ceiling lights snapped on, electricity pouring through them after years of existing as nothing more than hollow, dusty veins. Liam and I turned to see Zoo, Her bare right hand splayed out against a checkout lane. Chubbs was next to her, his face ashen. After only a few seconds of Zoo's power surge, the lights on the registers began to pop like firecrackers, dropping streams of blue-white sparks and glass to the ground. She had only meant for it to be a distraction, I think, a flash and a bang to draw the attention of our attackers away from us long enough for an escape. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see her waving us toward her, but the machine under Zoo's other hand had heated to a terrifying molten glow. I felt the invisible grip on me slacken suddenly, but fear kept me still as the dead. She wasn't letting go. Liam and I must have had the same thought, the same scorching fear, because we pushed to our feet, shouting for her to stop. "Turn her off!" someone managed to shout over the alarms. "Zoo, let go!" Liam stood and stumbled over cans of sunscreen and bug spray from a nearby display. I saw him lift his arms, ready to yank Zoo away with his abilities, but Chubbs was faster. He tugged the glove off Zoo's other hand and pulled it over his own, then all but ripped her arm away from the metal. The lights went out, just before the overhead bulbs exploded. I saw Zoo's face as she came out of whatever trance she had been locked in. Her big eyes were rimmed with red, her short black hair on end, freckles standing out against the full flush of her oval face. The sudden darkness gave Liam the opportunity to knock both her and Chubbs to the ground. And then, by some small miracle, the emergency lights flicked back on. The first sign of movement didn't come from us. I saw our attackers clearly now, climbing over the mangled heaps of white shelves. Four of them, each dressed in layers of black, each with a gun raised and ready. My first thought, as it almost always was when I saw anyone in a black uniform, was to run, to get the others and bolt. But these weren't PSFs. They weren't even grown-ups. They were kids, like us. As they came closer, I saw their mismatched dark clothes and the grime on their faces. They were all thin limbs and hollow cheeks, as if they had stretched out a great deal in a short period of time. All boys, about my age. All easy to take, if we had to. "Christ on a cracker," the one closest to me muttered, shaking his mop of red hair. "I told you we should have checked the van first." Liam's blonde head popped up from the wreckage. "What the hell are you fools trying to pull?" he snarled. There was another sound, too, like the mewling of a kitten, or a little girl crying. I climbed over a bin of bargain DVDs to get to them. Zoo sat on the floor, her pink palm facing up toward Chubb's squinting eyes. Without the glasses perched on his nose, he looked like a different person. "She's all right," he said. "No burns." Liam was suddenly standing beside me, using my shoulder for balance as he climbed over one of the overturned shelves. "You okay?" he asked. "Fine," I said. "Pissed. You?" "Fine. Pissed." I thought for sure I was going to have to hold him back as we came closer to the cluster of boys, but his fury seemed to fall away from him with each step. The other kids had regrouped beside an overturned display of neon-colored pool noodles. The tallest one, his cloud of frizzy brown hair hovering around a pencil-thin neck, stepped in front of the others, the ginger kid who had spoken before, and two big-shouldered blondes that looked like brothers. "Look, man, I'm sorry," he said. "Do you always do crap like this?" Liam said. "Attacking folks without even checking to see if they're armed? If they're like you?" The leader bristled. "You could have been skip tracers." "And it was your yellow that did all of this." The ginger kid gestured toward the shelves. "The girl needs a leash." "Watch your mouth," Liam snapped. The blonde brothers took a step forward, their eyes lighting at the challenge. "She wouldn't have panicked if you hadn't pulled guns on us."
"We wouldn't have had to use them if you'd paid attention to our warning back there and just left."
"Because you gave us so much time to get away," Liam snapped. "Look, we could go back and forth forever, and it won't solve a damn thing," I interrupted. "We were hoping to spend the night here, but if you've claimed it or whatever, then we'll go. That's the only reason we came, for shelter." "For shelter?"
the leader repeated.
I'm sorry, did I stutter?
No, but my ears are still bleeding from your yellow's meltdown, he snarled.
Maybe you should say it again, baby, for good measure.
Liam shot out an arm, cutting off my warpath before it could start.
We just want to stay here a night. We're not looking for any trouble, he said flatly.
The leader gave me the once-over, his eyes drifting to a stop where my hands were fisted at my side, bunching up my dress.
Looks like you already found it.
The leader's name was Greg, and he hailed from Mechanicsville, Virginia. The nervous ginger-haired kid refused to introduce himself, but was called Collins by the others. I caught that he was from some town in Pennsylvania, but that was as much as he was willing to share with anyone. The blondes, who were, as I guessed, brothers, were Kyle and Kevin. The only thing the ramshackle group had in common, outside of their pool of food and an alarming pile of firearms and knives, was their camp in New York, which they lovingly referred to only as Satan's Ass Crack. They told the incredibly dramatic and highly improbable tale of their escape from PSF custody over our shared meal of fruit snacks, stale Pringles, and Twinkies.
Let me get this straight, said Chubbs, his face etched with disbelief. You were being moved from one camp to another.
Greg leaned back against one of the glass freezer doors. They weren't taking us to another camp. They packed up as many guys as they could and said we were being brought to a testing facility in Maryland.
Only guys? Chubbs asked.
We didn't have girls there.
Greg's voice was heavy with disappointment. That explained a lot, particularly why he still seemed to be inching toward me, no matter how far I scooted away.
Otherwise, I'm sure they would have been loaded up, too.
I'm surprised they even told you that much, I said, trying to steer the conversation back on track.
Do you think that's actually where they were bringing you?
No, Collins cut in. It was pretty clear that they had orders to get rid of us.
And a storm flooded the road, flipping the bus and allowing you to escape.
That was the part of the story I had problems with, too. It was that easy for them? A simple intervention of Mother Nature and they were saved, washed out to freedom and a new life, biblical style? Where was the detail of PSF's traveling with them?
We've been holed up ever since. It took something like 6 months to get word to my dad that I was out and safe, and another 3 to get some kind of response from him.
Chubbs leaned forward.
How exactly did you get in touch with them? The internet?
Nah, man, Greg said. After that terrorist business, you can't even search for recipes online without the PSF snooping and breaking down your door. All they need is one whiff of trouble.
What terrorists? I interrupted.
The League, Chubbs said. Don't you remember?
Ah.
He seemed to realize his mistake a second late and, with more patience than I thought he possessed, explained.
3 years ago, the League hacked into the government's side databases and tried posting information about the camps online for everyone to see. Other groups took that as their cue to hack into banks, the stock exchange, the State Department.
So they cracked down on it?
Right. Most of the social networking sites are gone, and all of the email services are required to monitor the emails being sent on their servers.
He turned to the other boys, who were staring at me with varying degrees of interest and curiosity. I don't think Kevin, or was it Kyle, had stopped staring at me the entire time I had sat there.
How then?
Easy, Greg said with a highly unnecessary wink in my direction. We used what was left. I put an ad in my hometown paper with a message only my brother would get. I didn't need to look to know that Chubbs had narrowed his eyes. He tensed beside me.
And who paid for this ad? The editors didn't just let you put that in there for free, did they?
No, the slip kid paid, Greg said. He set everything up for me.
I sat up straight, kicking aside some of the empty foil wrappers. You've actually been in contact with the slip kid?
Oh, yes. He's like a god, Collins said, his breath rushing out. He gathered all of us together, kids from all over New England and the South, every color, older kids, young ones, too. They say that the PSF stay away from his court in the woods because they're afraid of him.
that he set his camp on fire and killed all the PSF sent to bring him back.
Who is he? I asked.
The four of them grinned at one another, the jumping shadows from the emergency lights making them look even smugger.
What else? Chubb said, sucking all of this down eagerly. How was he able to send the money for the ad? What's East River like? Where is it?
I glanced back over my shoulder to Liam, who stood behind me, leaning against what used to be a TV dinner freezer. He'd been strangely quiet the entire time, his lips pressed tight together, but his face otherwise perfectly devoid of emotion.
They have a sweet setup at East River, Colin said, but if you want to get to East River, you have to find it for yourself.
Sounds that way, Liam said finally. Are there a lot of kids there?
The four of them had to think about this.
More than 100, but not like in the thousands, Greg said.
Why? Liam shook his head, but I was surprised to see a hint of disappointment there.
Just wondering? Most never were in camps, I take it.
Some.
Greg shrugged. And some found it after dodging Skip Tracer or PSF custody.
And the Slip Kid. He doesn't have... Liam seemed to struggle to figure out how to ask his question.
He doesn't have plans for them, does he? What's his endgame?
The others seemed to find the question as strange as I did. It wasn't until Greg said,
"No endgame, just living, I guess,"
that I realized I hadn't once thought about the reason why Liam would be looking for the Slip Kid. I'd just assumed that he and the others wanted to find him to get home and to deliver Jack's letter. But if that really was the case, what had sparked the fire in Liam's eyes? His hands were stuffed into his jacket pockets, but I could see the outline of them curling into fists.
What about directions? I asked.
Well, now.
Something changed in Greg's expression. A slick smile took over his face as his free hand landed on my foot. The brothers, Kyle and Kevin, hadn't said a word since we'd sat down in their makeshift encampment in the freezer aisles, but now looked at each other with identical expressions of knowing. I tried to gulp back the revulsion rising in me.
I'm sure they'd be happy to have you, Greg said, his fingers sliding up from my shoe to stroke my ankle.
I started to push away, but stopped when he added, It's in a really great location near the coast, but there just aren't a whole lot of girls. They could use something so nice to look at. His fingers moved again, tracing a line up my calf.
You should go. It's safer than getting caught by one of the tribes.
There's a group of blue kids that hangs out around Norfolk. They're nasty. Steal the clothes right off your back. There was a tribe of yellows around here for a while, but a kid we were in camp with claims they were all taken in by PSFs. All of this tribe stuff was new to me. Kids banding together and roving the countryside, trying to avoid getting caught. Taking care of one another? Amazing. Greg's warm, fleshy palm continued its ascent until it swallowed up my knee and squeezed, and that was as far as he was ever going to get. I felt the trickle at the back of my mind, the buzz that pushed past even my anger, and had to close my eyes at the flash of images that followed. A glimpse of a shining yellow shell of a school bus coming down a dirt road, a woman's blurry face, her mouth moving in silent song, a campfire flaring up into the night sky, the faces of Kevin and Kyle leaning close to what looked like a clock radio in the middle of a trashed electronics store. The numbers on the clock's face were climbing, but not counting time. They lit an electric green glow in the dark. 310, 400, 460, 500, until it finally stopped on... My hand clenched into a fist as I started to detach from both Greg and his silky swarm of memories, but Chubbs was already there. He reached across my lap and began to peel Greg's fingers off, one by one, with a look of pure disdain. For his part, Greg only looked slightly dazed, his eyes glassy, unaware of what I had just done. I glanced around wildly, my heart lodged somewhere between my mouth and chest, but no one seemed to have noticed my slip. The only one who moved was Chubbs, and it was just to scoot closer to me.
Damn it!
I thought, squeezing my eyes shut again. One hand drifted up to press against my forehead, as if I could hold back the invisible fingers there by force. Too close. That was way too close.
What was that kid's name again? The yellow who worked with us in the kitchen? Fred? Frank?
Collins lay back on his sleeping bag, folding his hands over his chest.
Felipe? Felipe Marino?
Greg's eyes came back into full focus and continued up my legs, past where his hand had been allowed.
Felipe? Liam interrupted, as if coming out of a trance. Did you say Felipe Marco? You know him?
Liam nodded. We traveled together for a while.
Must have been before he got his ass caught here, Greg said. He was the one that told us about this place. Said he was here with his friend. That you?
Yeah. What happened to him? Liam knelt, wedging himself between Greg and me. They brought us to separate camps. Greg shrugged.
He was in one of the earlier buses they were taking to Maryland. Who knows?
So the yellows at their camp had been removed, too. They must have only been taken from the bigger camps, not the smaller ones that had been cobbled together farther west.
I miss that kid. He was smart, knew how to use his powers. Better than your pet, at least. Might as well send her back for all the good she's going to do for you.
Greg nodded toward Zoo, who was sitting with her back to us, working through the pages of multiplication problems Liam had made for her. And that was about as much as I could take.
You have 2 seconds to tell me you're kidding, I said, or I'm punching you in the face.
Do it, Chubbs hissed beside me.
But Liam put a firm hand on my shoulder, effectively shutting down any chance I had of making good on my threat. He kept his face passive, easygoing, but his breath hitched in his throat. He stretched his fingers out, brushing them against mine on the floor. I jolted at the touch, but couldn't bring myself to pull away. Greg held up his hands.
All I'm saying is there's something off about her. She's not like the others, is she?
He leaned closer.
Is she retarded? Did they do testing on her?
She's mute, not deaf, Liam cut in smoothly, and I promise you she's probably 5 times smarter than the 7 of us put together.
I'm not so sure about that, Chubbs began.
Liam silenced him with a look and brought his lips down next to my ear.
Take Zoo?
I nodded, my fingers tapping his to show that I understood. I pushed myself up off the ground, feeling calmer now. When I reached Zoo, I held out my hand to her. She raised hers without looking up, blindly reaching for mine. I stared at the yellow glove in front of me, streaked with dirt and black grime, and, despite what had happened a few minutes before, pulled it right off her little fingers. I couldn't say why I had done it. Maybe being so close to Liam and not losing control had made me stupidly brave, or maybe I was just sick of the reality that forced her into them. All I knew for sure was that if I never saw Zoo wear those gloves again, it would be too soon. Zoo jerked when she felt the warm skin of my hand against hers and tried to tug away. Her eyes went wide, but I couldn't tell if it was from worry or wonder.
Come on, I said, squeezing her hand. Girl time.
Her face brightened, but she didn't smile.
Don't go too far, Liam called after us.
Don't go too far,
the other boys echoed, then burst out into laughter. Zoo's nose wrinkled in disgust.
I know what you mean, I said, and took her as far away from them as I could.
For the first 10 or so minutes we spent walking around the store, Zoo kept turning to look at our linked hands, as if she couldn't believe what she was seeing. Every now and then, some bin of unwanted DVDs or an aisle end cap of pointless knickknacks would catch her attention, but her dark eyes would always wander back to where our hands swung between us. We had just turned down one of the many ravaged cleaning supply aisles when she gave my arm a tug. What's wrong? I asked, kicking aside a stray mop. Zoo pointed at the glove I was twirling around with my free hand. I lifted our hands between us.
What's so bad about this?
She blew out the breath she had been holding, and it was evident I had missed the point. I was dragged all the way to the other end of the aisle, where she let go of my hand to snatch a white box from the shelf. Zoo went to work tearing the box open, tossing aside the foam and plastic stuffing to get to the old-fashioned silver toaster inside.
"I'm not sure we're going to need that," I started slowly.
She pinned me with a look that very clearly said, "Quiet, please." Zoo tugged the other glove off her hand and spread all 10 fingers.